Hey guys, really important topic today. We're going to do a short, punchy interview with Matt Colclough. Had to check there for a moment. And Matt, I met last week in Skipton. I gave a couple of talks at events in Skipton, and he came up to me chatting. He'd been following a while, and fascinating discussion on the actual mechanisms of anxiety and how anxiety becomes a disorder rather than a reasonably healthy thing, spotting a threat, taking action. So we're going to go through with Matt all of his learnings on the mechanisms, because if you understand how it actually happens, you're well on your way to controlling it. And that's what it's all about, because it's an epidemic now, as many of you will be well aware, especially after the last few years, which kind of really ruined the population. But in any case, great to see you again, Matt, and this is going to be a good one.
Yeah, hi Ivor, and thanks for having me on. Great to see you last week. So I mean, obviously, I talked to you briefly there about anxiety at the show, and you asked me if I could do a podcast with you. So here we are. So a little bit about myself. So I had panic disorder as a kid. 14 years old, had panic disorder, and that wrecked about 8 years of my life. And like many people, went to the doctors. I was prescribed anti-anxiety medication. I tried various types of therapy. Some helped, but it never really did it for me. And this is a common theme in many people. Eventually, I began to educate myself, much like yourself, in the world of nutrition and geopolitics, looking at processes and understanding the nature of the beast. And that's where things really changed for me, so much so that I found those golden nuggets. I found the information that I needed. And I was amazed at how little of this information is out there, how little people actually know about it. And this is why we have the problem that we have. Anxiety disorder is the most prevalent mental health complaint by far, And it's easy to understand that. And the reason for that is that, worry is the main cause of that. And I'm going to talk a little bit about how worry causes anxiety to become disordered, because worry is the fundamental cause of all anxiety disorders. Simple as that. To cut a long story short, my story is that once I found the answers, I started a support group, which grew to a big charity and many different support groups within that. A crisis team now, and I became a therapist in 2014, and I've been practicing helping people since 2014. I'm also a mental health speaker, so I talk at various places, conferences, and mental health training in the workplace. So, for me, I'm very passionate about giving people that understanding, about empowering people through knowledge. Knowledge is power. Simple as that. So.
Absolutely, and understanding the underlying mechanisms. And I always said it with nutrition, to be honest, Matt, that people sometimes said to me, "Oh, just give me the bottom line. What do I eat?" And they want the simple answer. But I always explain to people, if you don't have some grasp of what the bad foods are doing to you and how it works, you're going to miss out on being able to actually fix it. You need to kind of understand it to properly fix it. You can't just be told, "Oh, do this." And someone with anxiety, you say, "Oh, listen, don't be worrying. There's no point. Worry is interest paid on a debt that you've not even technically got yet. Oh, it's silly." It doesn't work. You need to understand it. So it'll be great to get into that kind of understanding. And one last quick thing, really quick. I have a relation at the moment that has severe problems getting older, and there was always an anxiety problem, but with age, it spiraled. To the point that another friend of mine, when I was discussing it, said, "Wow, that person is in purgatory, in terms of trapped now in a world of suffering." But it's overwhelmingly based on an anxiety problem that was allowed to grow and grow and grow and mutate and then really spiral. So it's shocking. It's life altering and destroying. So go ahead, though. Let's get into why it happens.
And also, it's like with anxiety. I mean, as you were talking about, people just want to know, well, right, what is it that I eat? Well, in terms of anxiety, it's simple. What causes it? It's worry. So stop worrying. But that's not going to fix your problem. You need to understand why worry causes the problem. And then once you understand why it causes the problem, then you're more empowered to do something about it. So Firstly, it has a lot to do with the mind. This is a mind problem, and it's fixed at the mind level. So, if you think of a mind, a general mind has about 60,000 thoughts a day. So, if you think of like a pie chart, like a circle, 60,000 thoughts a day. Ideally, you want a mind that's very present in this conversation right now, or whatever interest that you have, being in that moment, planning that holiday, speaking to somebody, or fixing something, or whatever, in that moment. And that's where you will always feel your best, in the moment. Now, if you think too much into the future, worry, overanalyzing, misinterpreting, comparing, controlling, that will lead to anxiety. Whereas if you think too much in the past, rumination, so regret, bitterness, non-forgiveness, grievances, that will often lead to depression. And the two are very, very different. Anxiety, symptoms of anxiety, from inner apprehension to a feeling of unease, a feeling of nervousness, irritability, to the more extreme ends of feeling of impending doom, panic, dread. Whereas depression is very different. Depression is a lot to do with a lack of motivation, a lack of interest, of pleasure in things. You sort of lose the will a little bit. You can't be bothered. Give up. And so they are very different. And the way in which those thought paths, the future base and the past base, affect the body is very different too. So future-based thinking, anxiety, which I'm going to talk about today, has a lot to do with stress chemicals, and more specifically, a part of the brain called the amygdala. Whereas past-based thinking that leads to depression has a lot to do with serotonin, which is many things, but its most heavily studied attribute is that involved in mood. And when we know that when you think in the past in a ruminative style, serotonin levels are compromised and dropped, and the mood suffers. So ideally, you're trying to get someone back to the present moment. You're always trying to do that as a therapist. You're always trying to get them back to the present moment. So then, how does anxiety become disordered? Well, worry. So if somebody suffers with anxiety, then they're a worrier, and they usually have been a worrier for a long time. So then, what is worry? And the thing, one thing that I do in therapy is biofeedback. So in biofeedback, you measure certain parameters on the body which are indicative of a stress response. For example, galvanic skin response. So, you'd put a finger electrode on it, and you'd be getting that measurement there, from, it's basically microscopic sweat, peripheral skin temperature, heart rate, muscle tension. So these are things that you can measure. And when people begin to worry about things, or they begin to overanalyze and go down rabbit holes, you see spikes, you see amplitudes. So this is the sympathetic nervous system becoming elevated, and this stems from that amygdala that becomes aroused. So the amygdala, or the amygdalae, plural, there's two of them. There are, if you imagine a line through the eye and a line through the ear, a point in which they come together is roughly where your amygdalas are. Two little almond-shaped parts of the brain, about 4 inches behind each eye, which are in the midbrain. And the amygdala means almond in Latin. It caught the attention of early anatomists, which noticed that these parts of the brain look like an almond. And so that's where it got its name from. But the amygdalas, what they do is they're always looking for threats from the moment you're born to the moment you die. That even in your sleep, 24/7, your amygdalas are constantly looking for threats. And so the amygdala needs to receive sensory information to evaluate, is this a threat? And there are the back of the eyes, the optic nerve, there's neurons that go into your amygdala, the olfactory bulb in the nose, your inner mouth, your inner ears, all your peripheral senses, up your spinal cord. Your amygdala is receiving thousands upon thousands of neurological connections, and every millisecond, it's evaluating, is there a threat? And that's key, that the amygdala processes information in milliseconds, whereas the conscious brain processes information in seconds. So there's a slow, always a big delay. And hence, when you touch something hot and you move your hand out the way and start cursing, you always cursed afterwards. You moved your hand out the way first. You cross a road, you immediately, you see a car or something, you immediately jump back on the curb. You didn't think, I'm going to get hit by this bus or whatever. I'm going to move. You already moved. See, your amygdala's got your back. It's your instinct. And so We know why, because it processes information in milliseconds. Now, the key thing is that this part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, which is involved in many things, or it's involved in communication. So if we were to look down our brains now under an fMRI scan, you would notice lots of activity in the prefrontal region as we communicate with each other. And there's lots of neurons that link our prefrontal cortex to our amygdala. So when you have a fear-based thought, your amygdala becomes aroused to that, because that's what the amygdala does. It processes fear. So every single time that you worry or you engage in I'm going to use a technical term now. Every single time that you engage in an amygdala arousing thought, you inadvertently send a message directly to the amygdala. There's a threat here, there's a threat here, there's a threat here, there's a threat here, and it doesn't know the difference. It's a very primitive part of the brain. All it knows is on or off. It knows significance. Do I give a lot of adrenaline or just a little bit of adrenaline? And so it depends on what you're engaging with in your mind. If you're really worrying about something and getting stuck into something, then you're screaming at your amygdala, there's a threat here, there's a threat here. And on the output, the amygdala will send a message to the pituitary gland, down the spinal cord, to your adrenal glands, and then the adrenal glands just flood the body full of stress chemicals. And at the same time, in the brain, it begins to act on the neurons that link back to your thinking brain, your prefrontal cortex. It's like a lightning shower going on at this moment. And so in that way, emotions flood consciousness. Emotions flood consciousness. And this is because the increased levels of norepinephrine in the prefrontal cortex inhibits working memory. So this is why when you're in a heightened state of anxiety, that you feel things are just completely beyond you. You feel, you know, you're trying desperately hard to reason and rationalize with a situation, but there's rabbit holes everywhere. And, you know, I speak to people all the time that have panic attacks. And that's why emotions flood consciousness, and conscious control over emotions is weak. That's because of the wiring in the brain. There's more neurons that go out from the amygdala to the prefrontal cortex than come back. That's the way the brain has developed. It's all about primitive survival. We don't have to sit there and think about things in that moment. So how does anxiety become disordered? It's simple. This is it. I'm going to draw a circle now, which represents that mind. So, you know, most people, you know, when they're young kids or whatever, you know, they will, this represents the mind. And this little bit here represents a bit of maybe past-based and future-based thinking, which is a form of suppressive thinking. It tires the mind. So what happens is experiences in people's lives mean that eventually that begins to increase. So people begin to worry more and more and more about things. And, you know, a prevalent age for disordered anxiety is around 14, 15, statistically, most prevalent age. And the reason for that is that at that age, you know, there's a lot going on, you know, high school transitions from different education dynamics, different groups, you know, stresses of exams, biological changes in the body. There's so much that's happening there. And so there's so much opportunity for a vulnerable mind to begin to engage in amygdala arousing thoughts. And so that's what happens, is people begin to worry more and more and more and more about things. 60,000 thoughts a day, most of your thoughts are repeated. You know, it's estimated 90% of your thoughts are repeated. Yeah. The way in which you respond to your environment and people, there's a natural bias there in the mind. So the more and more that you think about something and respond to something in a certain way, the more and more you're likely to do that. So if you're worrying at breakfast, then every single day you're going to begin to worry more and more and more at breakfast. You see, the thing about the amygdala is it's so clever because it records. So whenever it's under attack and it spots a threat and it initiates a stress response, it switches the record button on because it wants to protect the organism that it's in. And it will record anything from any of your senses. So it could be that a certain song's on, a certain smell, sight or something. And this becomes recorded and associated with threat. And this is why sometimes, seemingly out of nowhere, somebody might have a panic attack or a heightened state of anxiety for no apparent reason. There's always a reason. Your amygdala always one step ahead of you because it processes information in milliseconds, spots the threat, initiates a stress response, pituitary gland, spinal cord, adrenal glands, whoosh. All of a sudden, the sufferer begins to feel anxious and they do the worst thing ever. They begin to worry. Oh my goodness, what's happening to me? So what are they doing? They're inadvertently sending a message back to the amygdala. Yes, 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 carry on doing what you're doing. Because it doesn't know context. So they strengthen the connections. They pat it on the back and it records more. And this is why people's lives become more and more contained. And they begin to worry about more and more and more. And the way out of anxiety, you know, a big part of it is explaining exactly that. And helping that person see how they fit into that model. How did their mind become increasingly more adopting that amygdala arousing thought territory? How did it happen? What experiences happened in their lives? And often what indeed may have been a contributing cause is no longer necessary anyway. Some cases it is, but most cases it's, we don't really need to go delving into the past. The problem is now, you see, people worry about things outside of themselves and they keep worrying about things outside of themselves until this happens. And then their mind becomes tired, their body high in stress chemical, and they eventually begin to worry about the state that they are in. And that is the point when anxiety becomes disordered, because now they worry about the state that they're in. Oh my goodness, what is happening to me? And they're in the fear, adrenaline fear cycle. They worry about the state that they're in, which produces more of the chemicals and so on and so forth. And that's when anxiety becomes disordered. You know, it's always the case. And the way through it is explaining that to people and explaining that now their amygdala has recorded things. And so at different times in their life, their amygdala is just going to switch on. So they need to adjust their attitude such that they can accept what is happening to them with as least resistance as possible. So that when the amygdala switches it on and emotions flood consciousness, it's about not going down the rabbit hole. And a great way to think about this is when someone at school, you know, when I was at school, people would say, what's that on your shirt? And you look down and get flicked on the nose. You know, don't look down. Because I help people all the time. And what they're doing is they're looking down. Something's like all day long, what's that on your shirt there? What's that? And you're looking down. You're engaging with the thoughts. You're engaging. Don't look down. Be mindful enough to catch it for what it is and have the courage to loosen up. Take a deep breath, let it out slowly, try to hack that nervous system a little bit, create the gap, and then work with it, not against it. And that takes a lot of courage, but it's a huge adjustment in your attitude.
Yep. But it really takes, as you said at the start, as we said, it takes understanding. If you don't understand what's going on, you're lost. Because you're at the mercy, you're on a little boat out in rough seas, you don't even know where land is, you are screwed. And it's funny, it resonates a lot because I, and people might be surprised to hear this now after particularly my last few years, you know, I had this problem and some of it's inherited from family members who had the problem. It's not genetic as such, but it's learned behavior because you see people, the phrase here was going into a tizzy. And I saw these behaviors quite strong in certain individuals and probably encoded into my mind that is an appropriate option. You know, I was made aware that you can go into a tizzy. An adult is doing it. Maybe there is some value in that. I'm not sure. But I had this tendency in my early career. I actually found out about cognitive psychotherapy through general interest. And I learned quite a bit of what you're going through now. And over the years, I actually learned to tame the beast to, I think, a very high degree. I even made a joke in the past few years, especially after my COVID experience, where I came under massive attack, even in newspapers. And people thought, Ivor, and they used to write to me when a newspaper did an article, are you okay? And I said, yeah, I'm fine. But I was just very lucky because I used to joke, I've got my amygdala subconscious thoughts problem, which is all part of it, these fleeting subconscious 50,000 thoughts fearing. I've got that locked in the basement. And I even joked, sometimes I go down in the basement and I poke it with a stick just to show who's boss. But I mean, that's an extreme example of understanding it enough to actually wrestle it under control and then look at it with interest. But for normal people, all they do is need to understand it enough that they know their adversary. They're conscious when the tizzy comes on or the slight feeling of panic. They know what's going on. They can visualize it and they can do that box breathing, you know, yeah. In, hold, out, hold, in, hold. And just think about it and say, I understand this and I know I can conquer it because I know in one sense it's not really real. I mean, understanding that it's not really real in a way.
Yeah, definitely. You know, two of the best parameters to hack if you're in a heightened state of anxiety, as you pointed out one there, the breathing. You know, adrenaline makes muscles contract and it will change respiratory rate instantly. So people have a breath hold or they speed up respiratory rate. And so just by, I like to think of like a wild stallion, you know, and it's, whoa, easy, easy. You know, like say, tame the beast, easy. Just ride it out a little bit. And a good analogy is if you was in a swollen river that's bubbling and raging away, if you was ever in that situation, you should never, ever fight your way out of that situation, ever. Instinctually, you want to. Instinctively, you want to fight your way out of the situation, but you're more likely to drown if you do that, expend your energy and go under. The best thing to do in that situation is actually surrender, let go, give up, and let the waves, the bubbling river take you this way, and naturally just follow the contours of the river, and you're more likely to get out alive in that. But it goes against your instinct, and it takes a lot of courage to do that. And that is exactly what people with anxiety need to do. They need to get in that place where, you see, people with disordered anxiety have a very strong voice of doubt, despair, and a very weak inner voice of reason. And each time that you pass through one of these amygdala arousing moments, the first thing to do is become mindful, as you just pointed out there. Become mindful. Be mindfully aware that, right, okay, here we are. We're in this moment. Mm. And then you need to stop strengthening those neural connections. I mean, you know, at a very deep level, what you're actually doing is you're unlocking synapses in the brain and building new pathways. You're creating, you're reprogramming the brain, your neuroplasticity. That is essentially what you're doing in therapy. You keep firing neurons together repeatedly. You forge connections and you can dance the salsa, cook French cuisine, you know, whatever. You know, all you've done, all people have done is they forged unhealthy connections. And so the first part of any, yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say it resonates so much that this is hilarious because I went through my journey. I touched on it and I won't go on, but there was a lot in that lifelong journey. And happily, I've come to a place of where I joke about having titanium kind of skin or tungsten carbide skin. Okay. And that's the way you might have to be in today's world, increasingly with all the problems. But I went to a weekend, friends convinced me a couple of years ago during COVID, take a break, Ivor, and come on down with us. There's a Joe Dispenza weekend in the west coast of Ireland. So I did it. And then I saw the WhatsApp group and they seemed to be talking a lot of woo, you know, the people going. And I said, guys, I thought this was science, neuroscience, but there's all this woo. And they said, don't worry about it. A lot of people attracted to this. There's a bit of woo, but no, it's hardcore. And it was amazing. I was impressed by this guy, Dispenza. But he said exactly what you said, among a million other things. The brain is plastic and you can retrain it. If you keep doing the bad thing, it'll only get worse because you'll reinforce all those linkages and you'll trap yourself in jail. But if you understand it and begin to break the cycle and you begin to reteach your brain, you can actually genuinely reteach yourself and physically change your brain towards someone who is much more robust. It's not woo, it's not, and he showed all the neuroscience and publications. It's literally scientifically true. You can retrain and remodel your brain. And I know as much as anyone, because I went from having a significant weakness in this arena to tungsten carbide skin. So guys, it's possible,
and,
believe me.
You know, and yeah, I mean, I'm aware of Joe Dispenza. I think I read one of his books once, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, I think it was. And yeah, he talks a lot on that subject for sure. And, you know, I'm living proof myself that the brain is plastic and you can change. I mean, you can change it. I mean, you know, it's been proven that you can change it. Every single neuron in the brain has the capability of changing, of remolding, of unlocking. And I have panic attacks every day. for years, you know, and I changed that. Why? How? For exactly what I just said. I became mindful. I caught myself in the moment. But, you know, it takes a lot of courage to pass through some people that have disordered anxiety. It's a lack of courage is a big component that keeps them there. It's a lack of courage. And the only way that you can build an inner voice is by passing through those difficult moments with as least resistance as possible, the right way, with the right understanding. Because the more understanding that you have, the more empowered, the more motivated you are to put up the courage, to go through it. You know, prepare yourself. Be prepared for that fight in the right way, in the right manner. You know, make the right chess move. And so that's what it is. And the more you do that and the more you pass through it the right way, that's where you build that inner voice that says, I've been here before. This is okay. It passes. It doesn't last long. And that's what you build on. And eventually, you know, you tip the tide there and eventually you have a very strong voice of reason. And that's what happened with me. And I speak to people all the time. And that's how you recover from anxiety and depression, you know, understanding and.
And if you begin that process, and if you're lucky to have a practitioner like yourself who can keep explaining, you know, start off simple, like we're sticking to here. And then as someone develops a bit, give a little bit more science, more understanding. But as you get stronger, you see the potential for the trajectory to, wow, I could actually get back to totally normal here. And it's a funny thing, but over the years, when I resolved those issues that most people have to some extent or another. I'm the type, because of my technical root cause thing, I went into it really deep and I wouldn't stop. So I got to the point where when anything really happens now, like suddenly they put me in a newspaper attacking me, for a moment you feel the amygdala. I mean, for a nanosecond, you feel the flush. You can actually feel the tingle of the instinctive panicky reaction. And immediately I just step in. And I have to in my career, I have to step in. But I also got into the habit of saying a phrase in my mind, dead cold, ice cold. And that's the way I think when suddenly something goes badly wrong. I think ice cold, hand chopped off from the saw, ice cold. The only way to deal with crisis, whether it's COVID or you caught your hand in the machine, is dead cold, dead calm. That is the survival, a bit like your drowning analogy. Yeah. It's the way it has to be. And I'll give a trivial example just because it's funny. I was down working on a place I have down south, a ramshackle cottage, and I put in a kitchen. And I was doing some work where I had a cooling coil, separate thing. And I took a liter and a half bottle we bought back from France off Rioja, a big, heavy bottle. And I needed to keep a water tube on the counter so it didn't fall off and pump water. And I knew as I put that bottle on the counter to hold the tube back, I knew there was a risk there because I always looking ahead as well, in a good way, I think. And I knew, now that's dodgy, but I'll take it. Screw it. I'm in a hurry. And it was a good few minutes later that I moved the machine where the water cooler was. And as I was moving it, my mind instinctively jumped and remembered, oh, the bottle. And just as I remembered it, of course, the tube was pulling. And as I remembered it, I turned and I could see it falling and it smashed on the ground. Now, you'd be forgiven for just effing and blinding and just, oh, because it's going to soak into the kickboards that were new. It's going to swell them. It's a mess. And you know what I said? I just said, oh, well, and I went about fixing it. Now, I know that wasn't a big threat, but it's just indicative. I go the opposite way of the instinctive way. Some disaster happens, things fall over and smash. Big problem. Ice cold. It's when you get used to this, it's amazing how it changes your life.
That's really good, you know, and that I suppose you I think you mentioned at the beginning, you're sort of interested in stoicism, or you know, you certainly have a stoic outlook on life, and that that's evident there from what you've just said. And you're blessed to have that ability, that reflective capability of just responding instinctively like that. It's very good. It's very good that I'll say.
But it did take just to that point, Matt. It took decades of working on it, focusing on it, understanding on it, and evolving it to get there. So I'm not saying, hey, I'm just a I'm one of those guys who doesn't get bothered.
Oh, so you've worked.
I went through tizzies in my career, even in corporate 20 years ago, where I got into these little panicky kind of things, and it embarrassed me a bit because I was clearly getting worked up, didn't look professional. So it's a long road. It was a long road, but it's a road. Once you stay on it, you get there.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that there you've been firing neurons together for a long time. You've forged healthy connections there. And in doing so, you've now got the automatic habitual response that is serving you well. Excellent, Ivor.
And by the way, it's not about me. It's not self-aggrandizing, but I just think it's a good example. And like, you have the perfect example. You were there in Sweaty City having panic attacks. I had a form of that. And the other thing is, it's so prevalent. Maybe we just talk a bit about that. The modern society, even in 40 years, I mean, it's literally going down the U-bend. And I don't want to be critical of people who have an issue, of course, but it's astonishing to watch how society has weakened en masse over a few decades, particularly since World War II. And the few... Crazy.
You know, I spoke to somebody this morning, and this is a common theme. So this person has been on medication for a long time. They've been to see various different therapists. They've been to see a psychiatrist. They was even on a psychiatric ward. They'd never heard of the amygdala, ever heard of the amygdala. And all of that, they'd never even, didn't you know what it was? That's frightening.
Crazy.
They didn't really understand the condition. They said that they'd spent a lot of time going over the past, looking into deep-seated causes where none really existed. And, you know, just in the conversation, I helped to give this person an understanding, which I was told at the end, you know, it's an understanding that, you know, I've never had that understanding. And this is just in an initial conversation. You know, the how often I hear that? How often I hear that? It's it is frightening, but it's easy to understand why, when worry is the main cause of nervous illness, of anxiety, and you understand what's going on, particularly in the world now. You know, there's more cause for worry. You know, there's a war on, potentially on the doorstep. There's all sorts of shenanigans going on all over the world. You know, so it's easy to understand. There's so much strain that's put on the average typical family these days, increasingly so. And so, there's more. This is what, there's a desperate need for people to become mindful, aware, and understand, just like you'd all the work, the good work that you do in nutrition, and understand, you know, about cholesterol, you know, what is cholesterol, understand the nature of the beast, and then you can make your own informed decisions on nutrition and whatever. It's likewise with the mind. It's understanding the mind. What is the mind, and what are thoughts? And what type of thoughts are changing the biochemistry of my body, and becoming mindful enough to shape and change that at the vital point, you know. And one of the greatest people to have ever who was a pioneer in this field was a lady called Dr. Claire Weeks, who died in 1990, and she was the first person, she was an Australian physician, fascinating lady. And she was the first therapist, really, to introduce acceptance-based therapy, which is what I'm all about, you know. Prior to that, it was all about psychoanalysis. And she really went against the grain, and, you know, a fascinating lady. And she said that when people panic, there's always two fears involved, first and second fear. The first fear is the first flashing fear, which comes unbidden, which means there's nothing you can do about it. So it could be that the person that I spoke to this morning has the feeling of dread, impending doom, that something bad's going to happen. There's nothing you can do about that. Second fear is prefixed by the words, oh my goodness, what if? What if this happens? What if that happens? And it's the second fear that keeps the first fear alive, keeps nerves sensitized, keeps the amygdala aroused. The key to desensitization lies in your ability to spot and cope with second fear. And as we've just mentioned, the way to do that is become aware. And you face it, you try to cultivate an attitude of acceptance, you loosen, you surrender, and you let it be there, understanding why that's necessary. You don't want to keep strengthening those connections. You need to tell that amygdala, this isn't a threat. Stop doing what you're doing. And the only way you can do that is in your attitude.
Yeah. And you know, that was great. I remember the cognitive psychotherapy. I'm not sure where it's at now, but way back there was a book called, God, I remember it, The Feeling Good Handbook. Sounds like kind of a self-helpy book, but it was very scientific, full of examples of people. And he gave example after example of people who were depressed, anxious, panicky, business owners, housewives, yada, yada, yada. But he always showed how when they actually took out the kind of checklists for the 10 destructive thinking processes and they began to write out what they were thinking and identify the subconscious thoughts that were flying through their heads that usually are invisible to us, they cause all this craziness, like you said, but usually they're all there causing all that trouble. But when people were able to write out and know the rules, I think those black and white thinking is where we instinctively, subconsciously go straight to, you know, it's a disaster or it's fully fine, instead of, you know, it's nuanced or the worst outcome thinking, where you automatically go, naturally, you go to kind of the worst possible outcome of some subconscious thought. And you dwell there. And then amygdala goes, you know, on a skiing trip. But I thought that was very good. The cognitive psychotherapy seems to have got a lot of this. And for me, it was all about, and I said this to so many people over the years, it's all about scanning your subconscious thoughts and being aware of what's going on under your surface and being aware of what it's doing. Because if you're not aware, you're going to end up totally like, you know, at the mercy of it. But if you become aware over time, you can get very good at it. I'll give you a quick example. Sometimes I feel really good. You know, you get this feeling or driving, and suddenly you just say, hey, everything's great. And I actually scan deeper to say, well, why do I suddenly feel like that? And usually I find the subconscious thought, it's something that worked out well, and it just popped in under my radar and made me feel good. So I try and dig it out. And likewise, you can feel kind of not good. And I go digging in the subconscious and find why is it? Ah, it's this thing next week. Drag it out in the light. Get the light on it. It's
Brilliant.
good.
It is. That's brilliant. And that is a great example, you know, of somebody that's applying exactly what we're saying here positively in the life and having a great outcome from that. Yeah, very mindful there, Ivor.
And arguably, we won't get into the war of the last few years, but arguably, I have to be these days, particularly in certain roles. But that's excellent, Matt. Well, I know we wanted to keep it really short and pithy so people could watch it in a coffee break. And it's not to give all the answers, but it's to give the core concepts, which you've done a great job on. And anyone out there who is struggling a little with anxiety or outright has the problem of panic attacks, where to go next? Have you got any? Well, obviously, I'll put on the screen the link to your whole thing. That's in the UK. I'm not sure if you kind of accommodate people virtually around the world,
Yeah,
but
I do Zooms all over the
resources.
world. Yeah, I do Zooms
Ah.
all over the world. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I'll put the link down below to the main link. And afterwards, if you have one or two other kind of nice links with primers or PDFs to help people
Sure.
research, that'd be super too. So, listen, thanks so much, Matt. I really enjoy this. And this is going to be very useful for a lot of people, particularly these days.
Yeah. Thanks, Ivor. Thanks for having me on.
Great stuff, man. We'll circle back later and explore a little deeper. That'll do it, folks. Great discussion there, I think, with some initial feeders on how to deal with this kind of epidemic problem around the world. And just a note there as well on anxiety and on being able to sleep well at night. Rick Rule, one of the world's foremost natural resources experts, memorably made the comment that the reason I own physical gold is so I can sleep better at night. And I think in these times of uncertainty, physical gold is a really important thing to have at least a percentage of pension or any personal resources in. It's immutable, it cannot be created or destroyed. It's true money, it's the only true money in the world. It's also been raised to tier one asset status in the Bank of International Settlements, the Bank of Banks of Central Banks, only in 2019, right up from 2B, because it's being bought by central banks increasingly and massively all over the world, physical gold, as we see the fiat paper currencies falling in value, purchasing power, and a lot of other instability in the world and the rise of the BRICS nations. I personally think it's really important to have some element of your family's wealth and future safely in physical gold. So Pure Gold UK, I struck up a relationship with. I interviewed their CEO recently, and I have a link down below where you get a whole year of free safe vault storage, though many people after that year may decide to take it into their own possession. And Pure Gold have vaults all over the world. They're top of the range company, great rates, and also they will ship pretty much anywhere in the world or store for you. So the link gets you a free a kind of introduction and meeting with one of their expert advisors. No hard sell, no commitments. They will go through your financial situation and put things like physical gold in perspective with all the other investments out there. So they're great guys. So the link's there if you want to take advantage. Completely up to you. So till next time,